rather than trying to put as much as they can into the 12 to 24 months for a typical project. Microsoft managers try to determine how much time and how many people they actually have for new development. They also try to allow for unknown changes or problems, then scale the product to fit the period and available personnel. In this way, Microsoft structures project schedules into planning phases and multiple iterations of product development and release, test and stabilization, and unallocated contingency or buffer time in between the milestone junctures. Each project has its own individual schedule, but there is an increasing emphasis on coordination of release schedules across products. For example, Office has an integrated schedule, including Excel, Word, and the other products that are part of this application suite. The program managers, developers, and testers who specify, implement, and test a new release of a product are the same people who correct bugs, modify, and enhance previous versions of the product, called product maintenance. There is no separate group for this activity. In many other companies, such maintenance consumes much of the time that developers could be spending on new product development. In contrast, Microsoft's product units have created continuous release cycles for new product versions. Not only is MS-DOS in version 6 and Windows in version 4, but Excel is in version 5, Word is in version 6, and so forth. Microsoft groups determine what they need to fix in a product and what they would like to add and change based on marketing and customer inputs. Then they do this work as part of the next product release. Next releases can also contain features that a project had to cut because it ran behind schedule, especially in the case of applications products. Project scheduling and milestones. Microsoft's sync and stabilize approach to product development, which Chapter 5 describes in more detail, originated in the late 1980s. This focuses around the key concepts of milestones and daily builds to strive for zero defects. Publisher 1.0, which the former Entry Business Unit shipped in 1988, was the first Microsoft project to use milestones in its schedule. Excel 3.0, in 1989 and 1990, was the first large project to adopt them. A few other small projects, such as Works, also moved to milestones around 1988 to 1990. Some groups did daily builds at this time, but they had only a weak notion of using the builds to continuously find and fix defects. Milestones, as well as daily builds and more rigorous quality control practices, gradually became more common in Microsoft after the 1989 retreat. See Chapter 1. The life cycle of typical Microsoft projects today contains three phases. Planning concludes with a functional specification and final schedule. Development concludes with the code complete release, and stabilization concludes with the product release to manufacturing. Microsoft calls the three critical points at the end of these phases schedule complete and project plan approval, code complete, and release to manufacturing. The concept of manufacturing applied to software products means the replication of diskettes and documentation. These three general phases and the underlying iterative approach differ from the sequential waterfall lifecycle phases of requirements, detailed design, module coding and testing, integration testing, and system testing. They are more similar to the risk-driven incremental spiral lifecycle model, which is being increasingly followed by software development organizations. Microsoft's planning phase produces vision and specification documents that explain what the project will do and how. These force discussion and thought on design issues before managers prepare the schedule or developers write code. The development phase revolves around three major internal product releases. The stabilization phase focuses on extensive internal and external beta site testing. Throughout the product cycle, Microsoft uses the concept of buffering. This allows teams to recover from unexpected problems or changes affecting the schedule, and it also provides balance between aggressive shipment goals and accurate prediction of the ship date. The planning phase can take as little as 3 months for an update to an existing product or more than a year for new products. In typical past projects, the development and stabilization phases have taken approximately 18 months and may be divided as follows. 6 to 12 months development time, generally consisting of 3 or 4 major milestone product releases. 2 to 4 months of buffer for development time, allocated for each of the 3 to 4 major milestone product releases. 3 to 8 months of stabilization, including testing, buffer time, and 6 weeks of preparation for final release and customer support. The target date for completing the final testing phase and the online documentation is approximately 6 weeks before the release to manufacturing. The target date for completing the printed documentation is approximately 4 weeks before the release to manufacturing. Of the total number of months allocated for development and stabilization, a project will generally spend about 2/3 of the time in the development phase and 1/3 of the time in the stabilization phase. Chris Peters, Vice President of the Office Product Unit, described a general scheduling guideline. Classically, in the overall schedule, you write features for half the time, and you leave the other half for debugging or unexpected things. So if I was going to work on a 2-year project, I would create estimates for 1 year. If things don't work out right, I'll just cut features I think are less important. This milestone process generally enables Microsoft managers to stay in close touch with the progress on a product and preserve the flexibility of trading off features late in the development cycle. Planning phase. The planning phase is the time for all pre-development planning in a project lifecycle. This period produces the vision statement, marketing plans, design goals, an initial specification, interface standards for integrating components developed in other groups, initial testing plans, a documentation strategy, printed and online, and a list of usability issues. The planning phase begins with the vision statement. This comes from product managers and program managers in each product unit. It is the marketing vision for the product, and it includes an analysis of competitors' products and a projection of future releases. The vision statement may also discuss problems to fix from the previous release and key functions to add, based on customer or market analyses and data from the Product Support Services, PSS, group. Managers consider long-term product planning issues as part of a 3-year planning cycle, as discussed in Chapter 1. The specification document begins in outline form and then defines and assigns priorities to the new or enhanced product features. As discussed in Chapter 2, the program managers coordinate the writing of the specification, but other groups of people contribute to the document, especially developers and testers. The specification document is only a preliminary outline of the product features. It grows and changes 20-30% from the start of development until the end of the project. Changes late in the life cycle tend to be minor, however, and developers increasingly need to have very good reasons to make late changes. Program managers create extensive prototypes using the Visual Basic tool. They also conduct design feasibility studies to understand design trade-offs and accelerate decisions related to the product specification. John Fine, formerly the Director of Program Management and now the Group Program Manager for Excel, explained that the specification document needs to define and package product features that ordinary users can describe in a single sentence. You invent the features of a product, feature by feature. All is from the user's standpoint. That's everything. Just never worry about anything else except, what does the user perceive? When you use a product, what the product does should be understandable enough so that any user can say in a sentence what it does. There have been products that, in my opinion, haven't done very well because, although they had a lot of cool features, believe it or not, no one could say what the product did. As discussed in Chapter 1, Bill Gates and other senior executives conduct the specification reviews for major products and delegate this task to division managers for less critical products. The outline specification document, developer time estimates, and the strategy for testing, documentation, and customer support provide the basis for defining the project's schedule. Gates also holds a project review for major projects in order to approve the project plan and schedule. Schedule complete with an approved project plan is the project status at the completion of the planning phase. Development phases. The plan for the development phases allocates specific subsets of features to each of the three or four major milestone releases, defines feature details and technical interdependencies, and records developers' individual tasks and schedule estimates. During the development phases, the developers write code guided by the functional specifications. Testers write test suites that check if features and areas of the product work properly, and user education staff produces draft documentation. Rather than waiting until later, developers fix errors found by testers and automated tests continuously throughout the development phases. This improves product stability and makes the release schedule more predictable. After a certain point in the project, for example, 40% of the way into the schedule, team members attempt to lock in the major functional requirements or features of a product, allowing only minor changes thereafter. If developers want to make significant changes after this point, then they have to negotiate with program managers and the lead development manager, and perhaps with the product unit manager as well. Major milestone releases. A project organizes the development phases around three or four major internal releases or milestone sub-projects. Microsoft intends these releases to be very stable. Theoretically, projects could ship them to customers, as Chris Peters observed. Milestones are something we used for the first time on a large project in Excel. I think all the other groups are using them now. What you do is you essentially divide a project into three or so pieces, and you pretend to ship the product after each piece. Developers may need to make several preliminary releases prior to each major release in order to meet the acceptance criteria of the testing group and achieve the milestone of a major release. Mike Conti, formerly a program manager for Excel and now a senior program manager for Office, described how a project works on a major milestone release. We actually break our development into three separate milestones. They might be 6-week milestones, or they might be 10-week milestones. At the end of the milestone, our goal is to get all the features that have been implemented for that milestone at zero bugs. And then, when we get to the point where we get to ship quality, we can move on to the next milestone. The point of this is so we never go so totally out of control that we're at the end of a project and we have so many thousands of bugs that we can't ever tell when we're going to finish it. Projects spend approximately 2 to 4 months developing each major milestone release. Each of these releases includes its own coding, optimizing, testing, and debugging activities. Projects reserve about 1/3 of the total development period for unplanned contingencies or buffer time allocated to each of the milestone sub-projects. For example, there were 13-week milestones for each of the three major internal releases in the development phases on Excel 5.0. The initial scheduled time within each milestone period was 8 weeks for development and 2 weeks for integration, making sure features and pieces of features work together properly. The Excel group also allocated 3 weeks of buffer for each milestone. The group did not use all the buffer on the first milestone, so the project added an extra week to the second and third development periods, making these 9 instead of 8 weeks. After the second milestone, however, Excel used up all the buffer, mainly because of a problem after switching the compiler used on the Macintosh. On the third milestone, the buffer was not enough. Developers required an additional 6 weeks, mainly due to Excel's dependencies on OLE and Visual Basic for Applications, VBA. OLE was 6 months late, and VBA 8 months late, resulting in added complexities and delays for Excel 5.0, as well as Word 6.0. As Mike Conti commented, "Well, the reality is we wanted to ship on the 27th of September, and we ended up shipping on the 22nd of December, so we were 3 months off. VB and OLE were big problems for us." As another example, The development phases on Office have four major internal releases, with a total of 21 months for development and stabilization. The first milestone release is an architecture definition subproject, and the managers view it as a special case. The other three milestone subprojects are each 16 to 18 weeks long. Each subproject spends an equal amount of time in development and an equal amount of time in buffer, while adding an additional week for each successive integration phase. Systems products, as well as consumer products and new types of software built in the research division, such as the Tiger video server, follow a similar process. There are, however, some differences related to the nature of the product and its customers. Brad Silverberg, Senior Vice President for Personal Systems, Windows MS-DOS, outlined the four types of milestone completion requirements for systems products and contrasted the incremental Microsoft development approach with his experiences at Apple and Borland. When we reach milestones, we have not just functionality, but size, performance requirements, and quality requirements. So that milestone isn't met until we've added these functions, we've met these performance goals, and we've reached this level of quality. If we were at a previous milestone, we may have relaxed some of the performance goals just to get that functionality in and still keep the milestone relatively on track. Then the next milestone is going to be primarily size and performance over function. And then beyond that, size and performance is just an integral part of adding function. If what we did at Apple is conventional, then this is a departure from that. Apple had separate, independent teams develop pieces. At the end, 3 months before you want to ship, you say, "Okay, let's integrate it all together." Borland broke it up into small pieces and would always keep things running, this incremental philosophy. It appears that this incremental approach takes longer, but it almost never does, because it keeps you in close touch with where things really are. Visual freeze, feature complete, and code complete. After testing and stabilizing the last major milestone release, the product undergoes a visual freeze. The term denotes that the product's major user interface components, such as menus, dialog boxes, and document windows, will not undergo any further major changes, even though minor alterations are certain. Projects use the visual freeze for the benefit of the user education group that writes the product documentation. The product becomes feature complete when it is fully functional and testers can run test scenarios against it. At this point, a product is still not fundamentally stable, probably has many bugs, and needs considerable performance improvements in terms of speed and memory usage, called optimizations. The final development phase ends when the product is code complete, which means that all features work as described in the specification and user documentation. No tasks remain except debugging and opportunistic optimizations. After code complete on Excel 5.0, for example, John Devon, formerly the development manager for Excel and now the development manager for Office, spent 2 months rewriting poorly implemented code. Chris Peters has a rule of thumb to determine when a project has reached code complete. Code complete is difficult to define for a 30 to 40 person project. For example, if someone spends 3 days fixing a bug, they are in effect writing code. They were never code complete to begin with. So what happens is, as you rush to finish the project, the bug count will climb. Then, as people transition off to truly fix bugs, which are bugs that they can fix in a few hours, you'll finally reach a point where the bug count will decrease every day until you ship. The path will absolutely be downward at that point. When that happens, that's when you know you're code complete, and there's no way to lie about that. Stabilization phases. The stabilization phases focus on extensive testing and debugging of a product in order to work toward release. Projects try not to add any new features during the stabilization phases, but they can add some if competitive products emerge or other market factors change. Microsoft organizes the testing process into a series of phases that are each, for example, 4 weeks in duration. Testers and developers find and fix bugs continuously in order to get the product ready for release as early as possible. Schedules include buffer time here as well, in order to accommodate any unforeseen problems or delays. A project distributes the last major milestone release of its product to a variety of test groups, internal and external to Microsoft. External testing groups, called beta sites, include a mix of individual users, large corporate customers, independent software vendors, and distributors. A zero-bug release comes after an extensive testing process finds no more high-severity bugs, and project managers have decided to fix all remaining known bugs in the next product development cycle. The developers then produce a golden master diskette and release it to manufacturing. This is the copy of the product from which Microsoft will make all others. Shortly after the product release to manufacturing, the project team generally writes a post-mortem document, an extensive summary of what worked well and what did not on the project. Between half and two-thirds of all projects actually write the reports, which range in length from 15 to more than 100 pages. See Chapter 6 for a further discussion. Buffer time in project schedules. Microsoft uses a buffering scheme to balance peak efficiency with better predictions. This contingency time is part of each major milestone during development and stabilization. Buffer time absorbs slips caused by incomplete understanding of features or technical issues, tasks inadvertently not scheduled, or unexpected problems. Problems often include delays in dependent projects or time needed to coordinate unplanned changes in features shared across more than one product. Primarily, however, buffer time helps a project accommodate unanticipated events. As Chris Peters recalled, "The big secret that we did when we finally started shipping things on time is that we finally put time in the schedule. Not the lazy and stupid buffer, but a sufficient amount of time for unexpected things to happen. Once you admit you don't know everything about the future, it's like an alcoholic that says, 'Yes, I have a problem.' Once you admit you have the problem that you can't predict the future perfectly, then you put time in the schedule. And it's actually quite easy to ship on time, if you're hardcore on cutting features or scaling back features. Projects should use buffer time exclusively for uncertainties, and not for such routine or anticipated tasks as feature development, testing, or document reviews. Project teams also use internal product milestones as their goals and do not assume the added buffer time. Internal milestones set by the project leaders in consultation with the development teams thus reflect the date of the major milestone minus the buffer time. Internal milestones are for use within functional groups only and do not appear on published team schedules. Groups outside the project team use the published schedules to do their scheduling. In applications products, buffer time typically constitutes 20 to 30% of the schedule. Peters confirmed this. On XL 3.0, which I think is the current state of the art in doing this stuff, we had 20% of the schedule as buffer time. Since systems products have relatively longer schedules and less divisible feature sets, these projects tend to need more buffer time. Convincing traditional project managers of the need for lots of buffer time can be difficult amid pressures to shorten product development times. Microsoft, however, regularly applies this concept across its projects. Brad Silverberg described resistance from senior managers and his unshakable belief in the 50% buffer rule for systems projects. A lot of the times, developers naively say, "It'll take me a week," so you schedule a week. We've learned how to ask better questions to size a task, as well as to incorporate buffer space into the schedule. In the past, a lot of people didn't incorporate buffer space into the schedule. I've been in situations earlier in my career where you present a schedule to the president with some buffer space, and he says, "What? Are you guys just going to go fishing or something? What are you going to do in that buffer space?" "Well, based on experience, we're going to need it to fix bugs." "Well, tell me what exactly you're going to do." "Well, if I could tell you exactly what I was going to do, I'd tell you what the tasks are. But trust me, it's going to be needed." It's a leap of faith for many traditional managers to see buffer space in a schedule, so a lot of times it gets beaten out of the development manager. "No, let's tighten it up. We need to ship. we can squeeze some of that buffer space down. So you have a schedule which is unrealistic. I don't know what it's going to be needed for, but time and time again, I know it's needed. Whether it's to fix bugs, or you have some idea along the way and you say, we really should have this feature. So, if you have 2 months, you'd allocate 1 month for buffer. A 50% buffer rule turns out to be accurate. I can't always explain why. Beyond helping make product schedules more realistic, the inclusion of buffer time also gives a project an opportunity to respond to competitors' product announcements or unforeseen industry events. Chris Peters contrasted the concept with older methods of project scheduling. Now, I don't know about perfect specs and perfect estimates, but there's no way in hell we're going to have perfect knowledge about what the competition is doing or which way this very, very exciting industry is moving. The old scheduling method is just adding up all the stuff you know about and saying, that's the date. That's all we know about. Are we at all surprised that it generates a date which is too little, considering how little we know about the future? The way you do an accurate ship date is you add buffer time, which is time that says the future is uncertain, which it clearly and obviously is. This isn't being not hardcore or being a wimp. This is just saying the future is the future. It's self-evident. Review and checkpoints. To create some pressure from top management to keep projects under control, Microsoft also holds weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly project reviews at key junctures, particularly before determining the implementation plan. As described in Chapter 1, Bill Gates participates in this process by meeting frequently, sometimes even weekly, with key projects. For example, the Excel 5.0 project had 4 reviews. These usually consisted of 2-hour meetings attended by Gates, Mike Maples, Pete Higgins, and other key developers and program managers, as well as the test manager, Mark Olson. For other projects that are more routine, Gates may only approve their schedules and specifications via email. Product maintenance and milestone zero. At most software development organizations, separate teams, who often have little product development experience, usually perform product maintenance activities. We noted earlier that this is not the case at Microsoft, where development of the next version of a product includes building major new functions, as well as fixing bugs from the previous product version. In addition, Microsoft sets up a separate product support team to answer telephone calls from users, basing the size of this team on the estimated volume of calls. For emergency problems, however, some product groups do have quick-fix maintenance teams who may also create an intermediate point release of a product to send to customers. For example, MS-DOS 6.2 to replace MS-DOS 6.0. Another concept that Microsoft has recently begun to deploy is Milestone Zero. John Devon described this as the work that occurs after the completion of one product version and before the official start of the next development cycle. The rule of thumb is people are responsible for making their own code work. It sounds like chaos at first, but in the end, actually, people do learn the right way to do things, and we make a little time. We're starting to euphemistically call this Milestone Zero. This is the time between finishing one version of the product and the actual official start of coding on the next version, where people go through and clean up the things that they know weren't right. If there's something that we really don't like a lot, then that'll become part of the schedule, and we'll formalize it more. For example, between Excel 4.0 and 5.0, developers spent 1 or 2 months doing this patching and fixing up. During Milestone Zero, developers also work with program managers to refine the specifications for the next version and build estimates for the schedule. Projects thus have opportunities to incorporate time into the schedule for the next version to correct major problems. New projects now spend about 10% of their time redoing existing features, including some user interface changes, rather than working on new features that are part of the next product version. There are also cases, such as with Windows 3.1 and Windows NT 3.5, where Microsoft introduces an intermediate product version that does more than fix minor problems. For key products, however, it is becoming more common for Microsoft to develop in parallel both a minor change, such as a 12-month revision, and a major change, such as a 24-month revision. Principle: use a vision statement and outline specification of features to guide projects. For individual projects, the key task for Microsoft and other PC software developers is to give enough structure to the development effort so that work can proceed, but allow enough flexibility to accommodate change during the development process. In order to do this, Microsoft uses a high-level vision statement and outline specification to get projects going, rather than trying to write a complete and detailed specification at the outset. The vision statement, a very short document written by product planners from the marketing group and program managers, defines a set of goals that drive the product development process, but does not outline detailed product requirements. For example, the vision statement for Word 6.0 was only one page, and its counterpart for Windows 3.1 was only one sentence. For a totally new product, though, the vision statement is usually much more detailed and actually comprises a rough specification document. Overall, Microsoft's goal is to have statements that are as short as possible and focused on describing clearly what the product is not, as opposed to what the product is. This is because deciding what functionality to leave out of a product is much more difficult than deciding what functionality to put in. Program managers use the vision statement to begin defining the functional specification document, which explains what the product's features do and how they interact with other features and products. Program managers start with only an outline specification document and then add more details as the project evolves, because they know it is unrealistic to freeze the features and their details too early. In a project's lifetime, competitors' products, customers' needs, and market opportunities will change. Therefore, the specification document needs to be flexible enough to accommodate changes and exploit new opportunities. At the same time, the specification document needs to be specific enough to estimate the project schedule and enable developers to make progress without having to redo and rework their features continually. Moreover, developers need to have the freedom to determine how to accomplish the feature objectives in the actual code. Over the course of a project, program managers are responsible for developing, updating, and evolving the specification. The complete specification document becomes one of the outputs of the project, like a user manual, rather than existing only as an input to development. Consequently, the complete specification serves not only as a final description of the product functionality, but as a central basis for testing and evaluating a product before release to manufacturing and shipment. Early in the specification process, program managers also establish a formal online location for the specification and use a version control tool to keep track of successive revisions. The specification document is not printed until the end of the project. In addition, they are supposed to involve the developers and interoperability group in contributing to the specification, use the document and schedule to reserve testing facilities, primarily the usability lab, and set up a tracking system for recording information for the postmortem report. Vision statement helps decide what features to cut. The XL 5.0 vision statement is about 5 pages long. It concentrates on themes that the marketing group wants the product to focus on in priority order. Special functionality, hardware and software required to run the product, special dependencies, such as OLE, overview of the business unit plan, and aspects of the schedule. The XL 5.0 vision also defines areas, broad categories of functionality used to group features, and assigns these areas to individual program managers. Because XL 5.0 is a relatively complex application with a broad range of functions, the vision statement defines goals for the current release as well as 5-year product objectives. It also contains separate, smaller vision statements for some of the individual areas. In contrast, the vision statement for Office emphasizes the harmonious use of multiple applications together to perform a single task. For example, creating a compound document containing text, numerical data, graphics, and automatically inserted scheduling information. The Office vision statement also views the PC as having one major application, rather than the more complex scenario of PCs with many individual applications that users have to make fit one another. A major problem in specifying a product is that the marketing people generally want more features than are feasible to develop within a tight schedule. To deal with this, Microsoft groups use the vision statement to help crystallize the defining themes for a product version. Then they can use these themes to include or reject candidate features. Chris Peters described what occurs if a project does not have a clear defining vision for a product, and the difference between a good vision statement and a bad one. Classically, the program managers will create a rough spec with way too many features than could be done. The developers will roughly estimate the time on each of those features, and knowing what the desired ship date is, there's a very cantankerous meeting where people barter and yell and scream and try to cut it down. Hopefully, you have some single vision of what you want the product to do. That helps you in the ever-present argument about whether this one ought to be in or that one ought to be in. Then there can be good and bad vision statements. A good statement tells you what's not in the product. A bad vision statement implies everything is in the product. In order to give you guidance on what's in and out, you have to kind of explain what the thing isn't. And too often, marketing will decide that it's best if everything's in. The hard part is figuring out what not to do. We cut 2/3 of the features we want to do in every release off the list. If we could actually write down everything we wanted to do, it would be a 1,500-page document. So the vision statement helps you in the chopping mechanism, not in the creation mechanism. For example, the vision statement for XL 3.0 stated that the goal for the product was to make XL 3.0 the most analytical spreadsheet ever created. In the subsequent discussions during the specification process of which features to add and delete, this vision translated into a decision not to include three-dimensional, 3D, graphs and other objects. When project members had to make decisions on which features to cut, they favored mathematical or data analysis features over those that supported graphical capabilities, although Excel 3.0 added one drawing function. Product visions, however, can change. It turned out that marketing modified the theme to Power Made Easy when Excel 3.0 finally shipped. This marketing theme focused on the product's powerful capabilities as well as its ease of use. The product actually supported the new marketing theme quite well, but the change of theme did cause some confusion among program managers and developers. Writing a specification document. According to John Fine, a specification document should be very much like a cooking recipe. He gave the example of a recipe, or initial specification, for apple pie. Pies can be many things to many people. This apple pie will have the best characteristics of all the pies in the world today. It will contain whipped cream, apples, flour, sugar, and a number of other key ingredients. It should be so big that everyone is satisfied. We will improve its size significantly from version 1. To make this pie, mix the apples, sugar, lemon juice, enclose with the crust, bake hot enough to make sure the pie is cooked to an acceptable degree. An outline specification document should serve as a cookbook for developers, testers, user education personnel, and marketing personnel. The specification communicates the product vision and requirements to all members of the product team, other product groups within Microsoft, and management. These groups are the customers of the specification document. Because projects base all the schedules for development, testing, user education, and non-English versions on information in the initial specification, it must describe features and assign priorities clearly enough so that projects can create meaningful schedules. We should also note that some program managers have felt increasing pressure to make these recipe specifications as complete as possible before development begins. A key reason for this pressure is the rising interdependency among product components, such as in Office. See Chapter 6. As a result, the specification documents that program managers create can be very detailed and lengthy, 1,000 or more pages, for complex products. Since the specification builds on the vision statement, it contains a superset of the information in that document. The outline specification document should have an executive summary that clearly states a vision for the product. It should also contain the following items: a one-sentence project objective, a list of what the product is and is not, a definition of the customer, and a definition of competitive products. It should describe the system requirements for the product, including the operating system version, minimum memory, hardware disk space, processor speed, and graphics. In addition, the specification should list any dependencies of the product on third parties, such as printer drivers, and on other groups or components, such as the Visual Interface Design Group, or OLE. The primary content of the document, however, is a functional description saying what the product features do, not how they do it. It also groups the features into general functional areas and sub-areas. A feature description generally follows a standard format. Each feature has one to several pages in the outline specification that describes how it is supposed to work and look and interact with users from their point of view. If the feature has a user interface associated with it, such as a panel, menus, or buttons, then the specification includes a mock-up diagram of how the interface should appear. Scenarios that illustrate how people would use the feature are particularly helpful to understand how to build the feature efficiently. The outline specification also describes the problem that the feature tries to solve. The linkage of features to specific user problems and activities is discussed in depth in the next principle, on feature selection and prioritization. For example, Word for Windows has a feature that quickly saves a document, even if it contains subset documents stored in separate files. This is common in desktop publishing and book publishing. An example of the outline specification describes the feature's problem definition as follows. Feature problem definition: the activity of publishing books. Professionally published documents that are longer are typically created by a group of people. The group members work concurrently on separate parts of the document, but the publishing is done as one single publication. While the book is only published once, it gets printed many times for iterative reviews. Thus, the consolidation and printing of the pieces as one master document is done many times. The problem with the current product: the master document support through include fields is weak and fragile. Consolidation requires resaving of the data at every level. Thus, the master document has all of the data of the supporting documents duplicated. Since the master document ends up being a mega-sized document that takes tons of time to save, you want to do it as few times as possible. But without doing the full resynchronization every time, you risk having the master out of synchronization with the supporting documents. The feature descriptions in the outline specification document are essential for user education personnel to write documentation and for localization personnel to write non-English product versions. Program managers try to avoid changing the terminology that appears in a feature's user interface, such as a dialog box or a menu, because it is difficult to keep track of changes in the documentation for non-English versions. When writing specifications for user interfaces, program managers can also facilitate the non-English versions by watching out for word length, abbreviations, date formats, currency formats, cultural differences, sorting sequences, paper size, right-to-left orientation, and other elements that might differ among languages or countries. Program managers coordinate and write down the specification. Clearly, program managers are at the hub of the information wheel during the lifetime of a product. They write down the specification, help define the user interface, and coordinate interoperability issues. According to John Fine, they ask questions like the following: what is the point of this feature? What does the user really want to use this feature for? Does this feature make sense? Is there a similar feature in the product or in any Microsoft product? Is this really the product that end users want? Is development really creating what we planned? What issues have slipped through the cracks? Is the intra-group communication satisfactory? As discussed in Chapter 2, a program manager is a leader, facilitator, and coordinator for the developers, but not their boss. Because developers usually become closely involved in creating the specification, it is most accurate to say that program managers write down the specification rather than create it themselves. Mike Conti discussed the role of the program manager. I'm going to give you a false impression when I say the program managers author the spec. Maybe more accurately, the program managers type the spec. The features are actually authored by the group in some ways. As a matter of fact, the challenge of the program manager is to try to get everyone to think that they designed it. Developers are very, very involved with the design. It's very unusual for a program manager to create a spec out of thin air, type it up, hand it to a developer, and it just gets implemented. More often than not, there's a bunch of iteration and haggling that goes on, probably because the developers have points of view about how they think features ought to be implemented. And part of it is because they'll give us cost information. Well, if you do it this way, with a separate window type, that's going to be 64 weeks. And if we don't do it, if we do it with a dialog box, it'll be 16 weeks. Maybe we should do it in the dialog box. And also, if you go talk to a developer and they say, well, that'll cost you 1,000 weeks, maybe what the developer is really saying is, I think it's a stupid idea. The estimates usually have an awful lot to do with how much the developer likes the feature. Specifications for major products like Office, including Excel and Word, or Windows, are usually defined by 10 to 20 program managers, coordinated by a group program manager. Some of the program managers work on the product sub-elements, such as purchased spell checkers or foreign language releases. Chris Peters illustrated the interaction between program managers and developers. Program managers try to allow developers to be developers. It's important to understand that the developers don't work for the program managers and that they don't have any control over developers in any sure way. In other words, if they write it in the spec, the developer may or may not implement it the way he wrote it. The programmer reads the feature descriptions in the specification document, understands the code, and then does something pretty darn close to that. Often, there is a lot of talking back and forth, and a lot of screaming and yelling in the hallways. Tool support for managing the specification. To communicate and manage the specification during its evolution, adding details of the functions of the features, as well as changes in the feature set, team members make heavy use of electronic mail. They previously used Word to create and update one large specification file, but now commonly use an Excel spreadsheet to manage the contents of the specification. The specification documents have also grown to the point where they now have separate large files for each specification area or sub-area. The spreadsheet lists the following: the feature number, the feature title, the primary program manager contact, the development contact, user education contact, marketing contact, international contact, and so on. Schedule estimate for each feature versus actual time spent. Testing release document information. Change revisions log for the specification. Of course, a user can move information from electronic mail to an Excel spreadsheet to an actual document written in Word. As an alternative to spreadsheets, Microsoft also has internally developed specification tools that manage structured Word files. Program managers primarily use these specification spreadsheets and files. On some earlier projects, Microsoft groups used a tool to handle concurrency control for the specification files. This allowed only one user to make a change to a file at a time, although multiple users could read it. It required too much hard disk space on each program manager's machine, though, and proved unnecessary. Now, Microsoft handles this access control simply by having people send comments via electronic mail to the program manager who owns the particular features. Only the program manager who owns the specification can actually make changes to the files. Prototyping. Prototyping has become a basic activity of program managers when they specify a new product or version. This allows pre-development testing from many perspectives, especially usability, and helps create a better understanding of user interaction. It also leads to tighter product specifications. Brad Silverberg noted that program managers even build prototypes for systems products. Absolutely, they will build prototypes, or they'll work with the developers to build the prototypes. The actual writing of the spec, the decision-making of this feature or that feature goes in, tends to be in program management over development. Visual Basic is the prototyping tool of choice for user interfaces. Program managers commonly use this in the specification process for a wide variety of products. Another popular prototyping tool, Paintbrush, allows program managers to create computer screen mock-ups of the product. These static pictures of screens are especially useful for minor modifications of the current product, such as changing how a dialog box appears. If program managers need to create a prototype from scratch or have a prototype that actually works, then Visual Basic is more useful. An analogous tool to Visual Basic is Apple's HyperCard, which the Excel Program Management Group has used for prototyping in the past. Visual Basic does not run on the Macintosh, although a Mac version is coming, however, and it sometimes requires more time and effort than a program manager wants to expend if changes are simply incremental. Visual Basic is excellent for prototyping dialog boxes, but not very good for other things, like designing new charting metaphors. Recipe specifications become living documents. The specification should not be so detailed that it constrains invention. Products that Microsoft builds require invention and creative adaptation. As Chris Peters noted, specification documents have to be flexible enough to accommodate this evolution. The spec absolutely changes during development. A spec is a living document. It's the current best description of the features in progress. It gives plenty of latitude to the developers to invent. Hopefully, it's thought through the hard issues, like how this feature interacts with other features, but something that we do differently here that I don't think is done in big Defense Department projects is that the industry is changing so absolutely fast that the spec must change as you're developing the product. You gain so much information while it's under development. You gain information on your customers. You gain information on your competitors. You gain information on how easy something is to implement. Or you actually implement one feature, and then you suddenly realize that, with a small extension, it could be used in this whole other area of the product that you didn't realize when you first started. You now see it. It's obvious. If you somehow said, okay, here is the spec, and then we're going to lock coders, which is a very insulting term for a developer, into this room, and they're going to write the spec, then you'd have terrible morale. The thing would be junk, and it wouldn't come out on time. Early versions of specification documents grow and change considerably during a project. For example, the initial specification for Excel 5.0 was 1,500 pages before the start of coding, and the complete specification when the product shipped was 1,850 pages. Some people in Microsoft consider this to be much too long. Word 6.0's initial specification was approximately 350 pages, and its complete specification was about 400 pages. A very early version of the latest Office specification was about 1,200 pages. Microsoft has not printed it recently, but it is now too large to bind as a single document. In addition to the growth in size, about 30% of a specification document changes, or churns, after the beginning of the first major milestone phase. As Mike Conti observed, if you read the spec prior to our starting development and then at the end of the project went back and looked at the spec, I would say at least 30% of the spec would be inaccurate. The spirit of a feature might still be there, but it might change. We had this idea, when we started, that this dialog box was going to have 5 options. Well, after we started developing it, we realized that 3 of those options were too expensive, but we need these other 2 because we haven't thought about them. So by the time you actually get done with it, it's a different feature. Conti also noted that projects delete about 20 to 25% of the features included in a product's initial specification. Many projects now try to describe 100% of the features thoroughly in the early draft of the specification before the first major milestone phase begins. In practice, though, Microsoft groups seem to achieve this goal for only about 70% of the features. The exact details and trade-off decisions of implementing a feature are often not clear in advance, so program managers deliberately leave parts of the specification incomplete. As the project continues, developers provide further information about the behavior of a feature, as well as implementation options and performance trade-offs. Chris Peters emphasized that there is an inherent need to see the source code firsthand in order to make the appropriate feature decisions. The spec will always be incomplete, and you always, as a developer, want it to be incomplete. A program manager can never see the code in the product. They never will. It's not their job. And to do the feature right requires you to look at the code and make those engineering trade-offs in the code. In addition, these features that we're working on are extremely complex features, so that, again, it's impossible without actually seeing the thing in action to know exactly what it should be. We've seen in IBM the horrors of writing directly to a spec, because nobody is that smart. What you have to do is see what the spec looks like, change it, and make it perfect. Make it something that people want. Projects sometimes add major new features that are totally absent from the early specification. Lou Perizzoli, software engineering manager for Windows NT, commented on changes made during the NT 3.0 project. The thing we ship has to have the functionality, run Windows, be compatible, be a 32-bit platform, be enabling technology, support network interconnectivity, and have the quality. What has really lengthened the time to release the final product version is the additional functions that have come in. The NT product is now going to have services for Macintosh, so you can hook your Mac client to an NT server. You can put Mac files up there, put folders up there, click on icons on the Mac, and see folders on an NT machine. That was never in the product 2 years ago, yet here it is in the product. All the remote access servers over telephone lines are in. We're going to get the ISDN driver into the product, so you can have your 256K line coming to your house, plug that into your PC, and talk to your server over ISDN. We would never have dreamed of putting that in, yet corporate pressures caused this to be added. So there was a lot of, let's add these neat things, like mail. There was no mail in the product 2 years ago. But now, we are shipping mail. Developers, however, need to know as early as possible what part of the specification is changing and what part is stable. They do not want to invest time in developing, refining, or utilizing a feature that the project later discards or changes to the point where work becomes obsolete. A developer on a large project never knows the status of a feature completely. Microsoft's approach to this is to stagger work, concentrating first on features that do not have much of a user interface. These are less likely to change because it is not necessary to see how users react to the feature before completing development. For example, developers might first work on a feature that increases the number of fonts a word processing program supports, or optimize the internal data formats for storing a file on a disk. Later on, they might work on a frequently used feature, such as the toolbar for drawing. Very late resolution of user interface appearances, though, can threaten the timely production of documentation and shorten the time available for usability testing. John Devon recalled some problems in Excel 4.0 that occurred because they firmed up the specification too late in the project. The Excel 4.0 development phases began July 8, 1991, and the first release, the Windows version for the United States, shipped on March 27, 1992. The decision to go with a short development project occurred very late, so late that we had to start coding right away. This was a mistake in that it introduced a lot of undue stress into the entire business unit. From the strictly development perspective, we ended up making many implementation decisions long after the schedule was completed. This meant the schedule was not as accurate as it could have been. Since we were making some decisions very late, other parts of the program could not be implemented in sync with other new features. For example, since workbooks were designed and implemented so late, it was impossible to have Lotus 3D sheet loading implemented according to the final design. This resulted in a large number of late-breaking bugs against worksheet loading, which could have been avoided. In general, these bugs tended to be concept bugs, rather than simple errors. The programming team did a good job of making substantial changes very carefully right at the end of the project. Because of the late design decisions being made, it was nearly impossible for testing to generate good test cases. The lack of an upfront design period caused stress between functional groups in the business unit. The relationship between program management and development was affected the most. Because so many decisions had to be made in a short amount of time, some program managers resorted to being autocratic. This caused developers to feel that the program managers weren't on our side. Visual freeze for documentation. If projects finalize most of the user interface details too late in the project, then the user documentation may be incomplete or inaccurate because insufficient schedule time remains to make the documentation changes. To guard against this problem, Microsoft instituted the target of visual freeze to allow user education personnel to write documentation in parallel with the final debugging and testing. But this target becomes almost meaningless if developers continue to make changes or hold user interface features until the end of the project. Despite their best efforts to freeze the visual appearances relatively early, developers usually make late changes to product features that affect what users see. The user education personnel have little choice but to redo the documentation in the end to accommodate the changes. This reflects the dominant position of developers versus testers or documenters at Microsoft. Chris Peters acknowledged the problem. Sticking to the visual freeze is the hardest thing in the world. All the stuff always gets done at the end, and the user ed people are always screaming. It's the classic battle. You always hose the documentation. What I mean is, the document is still basically correct. What happens is those people have to work 12-hour days and lots of weekends near the end. They have to redo a bunch of work. Flexible specification documents. A fundamental cause for product delays at Microsoft and elsewhere is continual change in the specification document or feature set of a product during development. All too often, once a team agrees to change something in the specification, then everything becomes subject to change, and the original specifications and schedule slip beyond recognition. Mike Conte elaborated on how specification changes lead to schedule delays. When you look back at why those schedule delays happen, there's a whole bunch of places where you can point the blame, but there's some fundamental things that could be a problem. One is, if you keep changing the product definition, if every time something comes up you say, well, we need to change our plans, we need to add this feature, that has a tremendous effect on the product. Every change takes all this time to implement, and now you've slipped the whole product out. It affects people's decisions in terms of, well, if that's open for debate, let's open everything else up for debate also. The other thing was that you had a product development schedule where you would start development. You had some vague idea when you were supposed to be done, and then you had to debug the product. This is still the way, actually, most applications are written. Microsoft has relatively flexible specification documents. Some projects, however, have instituted controls over major changes in the spec after certain points in the project, such as 40% into the schedule. They allow minor changes afterwards, primarily to get features to work properly, but not to add new features. This type of control is easier to accomplish with products like Word or Excel because these are in multi-year version cycles, with new versions appearing every 12 to 24 months. If these projects discover during development that they should have made a major change, they will postpone the change until the next version rather than ruin the current schedule. Conte was proud of how the Excel group has been able to avoid making major changes to the specification after a certain point. It also means we try to be very disciplined, that we actually don't start development until the spec has been frozen and we have a balanced development schedule with all the features we're going to do. If we want to add features in the middle of that process, it is really, really hard for us to do. So, if we learn something in the middle of a product, too late, next time. The reality is that there always are some small things that you're going to sneak in that are really opportunistic. But it is a difficult thing, because they have to walk through the process. There are a lot of groups that are involved. Late feature additions not only cause development delays, they also squeeze the time available for testing. A willingness to allow a specification to evolve, however, can help a product succeed in the marketplace. This may be especially true with products that have long development periods, because market needs and company needs change over time. It may also take unusually strong technical leadership to keep a project with a significantly evolving specification under control. At some point, managers have to say no to any more changes or become extremely selective in what they agree to add to a product. Windows NT provides a good example of this flexibility and strong control. We noted in Chapter 3 that NT began in the late 1980s as a replacement for OS 2, which Microsoft and IBM were developing jointly, until 1989, to replace MS-DOS. Microsoft hired Dave Cutler from DEC to manage the project. He was not familiar with the new Windows type of interface, but he wrote a specification and then a detailed design for a solid operating system for the corporate market. The divorce from IBM and the explosive takeoff of Windows 3.1 then convinced Bill Gates, Paul Moritz, Steve Ballmer, and other senior Microsoft people to bring NT into the mass-market Windows family. In particular, Microsoft's top management wanted NT to adopt the Windows 3.1 graphical user interface, as well as become fully compatible with Windows 3.1 applications. These and other requests required dramatic changes in the product. Before NT shipped in 1993, it underwent three major design changes after the original detailed design. Cutler and his team oversaw all of this work and kept the project relatively well under control. They also demonstrated considerable discipline in resisting additional changes to the product over time. For example, Lou Perizzoli recalled the decision not to support double-space data compression, because adding this feature would not have allowed them enough time to test the product thoroughly. When considering the double-space stuff that DOS 6.0 has, we just said no. We can't afford to do that in a file system that takes 3 months just to test. So if it takes 6 months to develop it, add 3 months to test it, and then, would you trust your data in a file system that has only been